So I read a tweet you had yesterday, I think it was, about people namasteing in your DMs.
That you were,
I'm assuming, because I don't know the context, I'm assuming you've been doing a lot of Web3 Twitter spaces and stuff, right? And maybe jumping around and people are like, maybe it's February, it's Black History Month. People are like, oh, jump in this and, you know, talk about what you're doing. And it's all a lot of lip service. A lot of people thanking you for this. A lot of people doing what you're talking about. And then exactly what you're saying right now, where it's like, unless you're actually taking action, what are you doing? But this comes back to my original question, which is like, I totally appreciate the fact that it's not your job to make someone give a shit about the work that you care about. That's not on you. Awareness is on you. What is the solution to, like, when that happens, where people are not taking that next step, right? Where the platforms are meeting, the folks with the resources are present, and they're namasteing in your DMs, they're saying thank you, and they're not taking the next step, and you feel like, well, it's not my job to make you feel a certain way. Where is the optimism? Like, what can happen there in terms of, like, not optimism, by the way, but that's not really the right word. What I mean is, where is the, how can that gap be filled? Because I fully agree with you. It's absolutely not our role. It's not your role as an activist to try to say to somebody else, like, you should feel this way. That's true. It's just like, here it is. Here's the facts. You know, do with it what you will, but hopefully you have a conscience and you can appreciate this and you will do something. And then you go in these, maybe you're like I said, maybe it's Twitter spaces, but you're talking about the issues that matter to you. And then that traction doesn't happen. Like, what can be done about that?
Well, I will say that if I were somebody, I will say that time in the space, like, this is a new space for me.
Yeah.
You know, at this point we've developed three schools. We've brought, you know, 11 by 17 feet murals into prisons.
Awesome.
We've supported policy work, youths building, making policy work. I think that what I know to be true is that we're already victorious. I kind of come into spaces and just allow people to, the way I see it is like they have an opportunity to align themselves, you know, and to character is not something you can buy. You can't follow character. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I always want people, I believe in people to want, to do the right thing, whether or not and to know when they don't have the pulse, their pulse on the heart of the thing that is right to do. And so the space for me, what I've been learning is that it's about trust. And so our relationship with trust as it relates to trusting Black people, trusting Black women, trusting queer, gender nonconforming, marginalized people, trusting system involved youth, trusting single mothers, trusting the people who we call ourselves wanting to uplift, trusting that they know what they need, and trusting enough to put resources directly into their hands. Investing in me as an artist, you're basically saying, I champion that cause. It's not so much that I'm saying, oh, I need for her to keep making art.
Yeah.
I need to amplify that thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
The more resources you put over here, right, the better the outcomes for all that I'm involved with. And that's the thing that's like different for a lot of people, because they're like, well, I don't know if it's just that deep. I'm used to paying $1.29 for a song, and who cares what they do with it? You know what I'm saying? I don't know if it's going to change the world. So many people have convinced themselves that they can't change the world. So they could just keep saying it over and over and over again. And it's like this self-fulfilling prophecy almost, like, you know, I'm just, who am I? I'm just this guy. in Idaho. I can't change the world. You know, who am I? I'm just a patron of the arts. I can't change the world. But then if you really interrogate that, do you really believe that? I mean, music is the thing that like most people resort to or reach for when nothing else makes sense, when no other language is serving to communicate what it is they feel, et cetera. So it's like, you know, I think I spoke about that on the Twitter feed because I just think in reexamining my positioning, even in that space, this is sort of be like the thing that you know, are saying thank you and I appreciate and I'm so grateful for, and every other DM is thank you for speaking up on that and thank you for speaking up on that. And that's the thing that you wanted to hear in that moment. It's not just to make you feel like a good human. The next step is for you then to share my work, shill my projects to someone else, bid on my work, because bidding on it is saying what she's saying, I fuck with that. That is what I believe in.
Yeah, exactly.
That is where we need to be. That's how we're supposed to be evolving. And, you know, I think that we're right now deciding what sort of is going to be, what is taste on the blockchain, right? So like, if I can one breath be like best hip hop of Bandcamp in January, like I'm on that list. And for some people who are like, well, if it's conscious, it's a good rap. And it's like, okay, fine. If you're interested in taste making and critique, but certainly it's really good rap. And, you know, it also does this thing where the utility is it's plugging you into the stories and to the lived experiences of people who need to be heard.
Yeah. I mean,
and you can be a part of the more space you give me, the more investment you give me, the more space you give all of these other folks who need to be heard. And that's where it gets, you know, you want it to be authentic, because I think that it's interesting, right? Like when you think about me out loud talking about reparations, and if you're someone and you're like, oh, I don't like my art political. I'm like, are you serious?
It's impossible to be. You can't be apolitical in this world. It's impossible.
So someone tweeted that yesterday, and I don't know this guy from Adam, but I totally resonated with that.
I hope I didn't borrow. I mean, I believe that. Hopefully I didn't see that tweet. And if I did, I'm crediting whoever that is, but I believe that myself anyway, though.
Yeah. No, he said Ethereum is neutral. I am not.
Oh, Vitalik said it.
Ethereum is neutral.
Yeah.
I am not.
Vitalik Buterin, the inventor of Ethereum, said that. And then he put out his message in Russian, in Russian to the Ukrainian people about how it's a bad war. It's a wrong war. And because he's of Russian descent, Vitalik. I love
that he was the inventor of Ethereum. That was the shit I'm talking about. Like, this is the person who clearly gets it. When I'm saying, will the blockchain break chains? When I'm saying, who's going to mint the revolution? I am saying, what are we all doing over here?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right now, in this time, it's not just philosophical. It is certainly a move to redistribute resources, to invest in that which we want to, that we do believe in. And what will be, you know, what will be the thing that we all spent, and this is just 2 years in now, or a year now, a couple months for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, you know, this opportunity for the blockchain to be a part of reparative economics is just too obvious.
Yeah.
You know, 100%. Obviously. Yeah, you know, and the anonymity factor, like if you want to be an anonymous person who's like, I'm not ready to share with the world that I believe that descendants of African slaves who were enslaved in this land, who endured slavery, endured Jim Crow, and have endured every single system and structure, have survived every system and structure that has legally been sanctioned to discriminate and keep them away from resources. I believe in their restoration. I want those people in quotation marks. I want descendants of African enslaved Africans in America to specifically. And so people get like sort of taken aback when you say that. They're like, well, what about? And I'm like, yes, of course, global blackness, of course, global majority. But what the 14th Amendment teaches us is when Black Americans make any stride, right, every other non-white group is able to build upon that. There is no role. And that to me is just as much as about mindfulness as any other spiritual principle. When we talk about restoring balance, when we talk about restoring access, when we talk about healing, when we talk about Black Americans being able to say like, hey, no one in my family has known what it's like to have a day off of work.
Right.
Our relationship to labor and extraction, we don't want that anymore. Yeah. Right. We want, you know, unequivocal access to healthcare, mental health, housing, and we want it wholly, because every sector of society has benefited off of our backs. We want restoration. We want restitution. We want, as defined by the UN, all of the tenets of reparations, like every other group has experience. What's scary about that for some people is that that's when you really eradicate poverty. And so people are afraid, like, what would it look like if Black people were not poor?
This topic
would
right here.
Mean that I would have to be poor? And so that's how we get to, I want you to think about the intersection between spirituality and economics.
So Thich Nhat Hanh died recently. He died 2 months ago. And what I didn't know.
I stayed at one of his students' temples, Compassionate Cloud, Dharma Cloud in Denver. They were our hosts when we were in Denver, one of Thich Nhat's students.
Oh, I didn't know that. That was amazing. I didn't know it was one of Thich Nhat Hanh's students. Yeah, it's amazing. What I didn't know about him, I knew a lot about him. What I didn't realize was that in 1967, that Dr. King actually nominated him for a Nobel Peace Prize because he believed that you can't be a mindful person on the earth. You can't walk the walk of, you can't claim to want equanimity and not stand in solidarity and actually do things about it and not actively be on the front lines and show that you embody it. You can't just pay lip service to it. You can't sit in a temple or a cave for 5 years and just meditate and have light beaming out of your head and claim that you actually strive for equanimity. You've got to work for it. You've got to do things that show that, and you've got to be a part of it. Dr. King is one of my, you know, I look up to him on a level that like nobody else on earth. I had no idea that he looked up to Thich Nhat Hanh in that way. And like that just made sense to me, but it just was unbelievable because I believe that 100%. And like when I have the conversation with, it's interesting because I moved around the country. I've lived, I grew up in Suffolk County, very homogenous, non-diverse place. And then I moved to New York City and I lived in New York City most of my life. And I lived in different parts of New York City and different diverse, I would look for diversity because I didn't come from that. And I didn't like that. I didn't feel uncomfortable. I felt uncomfortable with the fact that there wasn't a diversity of viewpoints, a diversity of a background. There just wasn't that. And I felt like it was lacking. So moved to the city, went to the school in the city, and then I traveled around the country. I lived in Asheville, North Carolina, which is one of the places that actually, one of the first cities that actually at least announced that they'd like to put into policy statute a reparations law. Where it sits right now, I don't know. I don't know the actual status of it, but I know that about a year and a half ago, because that's a very progressive political center. I mean, and I'm proud to have lived there.
There are 11 cities right now, as we speak, that are piloting reparations policy.
Amazing.
This year.
Mm-hmm. But to your point, though, it's like you just talked about. So when I was at, I went to Fordham University in the city of Manhattan, and I studied a class called The Political Economy of Poverty. And it was one of the coolest classes I ever took. That, and I took a class on the diversity of viewpoints of Malcolm X and Martin Luther King at the same time. And so they both kind of correlated, both of these discussions, because in the political economy of poverty, I learned about just how, like, it's one thing to hear about embedded racism, and it's one thing to hear about institutionalized racism. It's another thing when you see the examples and how clear as day they are, and how people aren't even aware that the most obvious in front of their face situations are representations of institutionalized racism. And so one of the examples given in this class was the housing projects in Chicago, and sort of how they were designed and how they're intentionally kept to cut off Black people from the city center, so that they would not have the ability to essentially get the same access to the good jobs that were happening in the Loop in Chicago. They were sort of just kind of, they created these circles outside the city that kept people captive. And it was done by intention. It was very obviously done. And when I bring this up to people, when I talk about it, especially to people from where I'm from, in Suffolk County, I hate to be calling people out right now, they're going to hear this, but I'm going to call them in right now. Please listen, don't get pissed off, but I got to bring it up because I have this discussion and I'm like, what do you think, like, put yourself, live in a situation, because everyone has this like fallacy that like, we live in America. Everybody could pull themselves up by the bootstraps. We're all born into, you know, we're all born with the same possibilities. I'm like, what are you talking about? No, we're not. Like, do you see the lack of tax dollars that are in certain districts? Do you see that the certain schools just don't have the resources to get people? Like, think about your own children who you want to be teachers and such. You don't want them to teach in these areas. Like, you're trying to steer them away and go other places because you're fearful. You think there's crime there. You have an idea of what it looks like. And therefore, people are, you know, you're driving people away. You're driving resources away. First of all, the resources aren't there. And the perceptions are that that those places should not have good resources. You're already designing this in your mind. So how could you sit here and say that we all have the same opportunity? Like, how could you believe that? Like, it's insane to me. And on top of it, have you ever put yourself in the shoes of somebody who potentially, like, could you conceive of visualizing what the day-to-day is of someone who's got to go to school in an area that's got, it's got it rough, right? Like, it's got, you got all sorts of conditions that you don't have to deal with in your environment that people have to deal with on a daily basis just to get to, just to get the basics of things you think are just coming for granted, let alone the add-on stuff like tutoring, like additional, whatever, all sorts of other stuff that got to get you to other levels that you kind of need to do. So like, how can you not know, or how can you kind of sit there and act like we all have the same opportunity? Some people are just, what is it? They're lazy. You think like you just have a population that's just lazy? Like, what do you believe?
It's the opposite too, Gary, though, to be honest. If you really, this is the thing, and this is a call in, you would really have to think of yourself as more deserving of than another group of people. You would have to believe yourself. You would have to say, I have worked harder. My family worked harder. Right. And that's why I talk about the relationship between spirituality and economics. So, you know, the very core of work that I'll do, something that I say to myself, I say to my family, I say to my comrades, my collaborators, my community members, people that I'm doing work with one-on-one or otherwise, you are worthy and deserving. People, just the knowing that you are worthy and deserving. You're worthy and deserving of the quality of life that your heart desires, the time off, the rest, the mending, the therapy, the restoration. And, you know, my family grew up, a family that came out of the Pruitt-Igoe projects. I want you to watch the Pruitt-Igoe story. There's a sociologist who did this documentary that helped me understand better. And I was drawn into it because my great aunt has this awful cough that she's been dealing with. And most people of her generation who came out of the Pruitt-Igoe projects in North St. Louis also have this cough that was later determined to be cancer, et cetera. And that's because of all of the military's spraying of cadmium all over the projects, and they were told that it was insect repellent, when really it was experimenting on the effects of or the likelihood of cadmium being used for biotech war right out front of World War II.
Wow.
So, you know, this is things, these are things that really happen, and things, you know, like the impact or the effects of something, hot cadmium at high, or even small doses, was certainly at the amount that it was being sprayed in fluid Igo. Some of the impacts of that toxin are things like high aggression levels. So when you think about senseless murder, you think about people who are not in direct, don't have direct access to the resources they need to thrive. We're done with just this base level survival. And that's what people don't get. They're like, oh, well, you know, we do all have the same opportunities. No, we're literally watching. In this time, we can see on Instagram, we can walk out our doors and see that to have and to have not, and what it means to thrive and what it means to just barely survive. And everybody is worthy and deserving of privation. The universe is abundant. The resources are there. And even something like, you know, large scale reparations at the federal and local levels, completely possible, completely doable, completely pragmatic, practical. Should I go on? It's certainly there. It's just a matter of folks deciding who is worthy and deserving. And if we are all worthy and deserving, once that is as a divine principle, that's really a character check for us as a society. It then means that we grow further and further away from the colonial myth of the savage and the savior, of you know, of the father and the children, the patriarchal, you know, the paternalistic, the haves and the have-nots. And it really scares people because they're like, uh-oh, where goes our capitalism? And I am not ever, you know, someone that's like, oh, I am a this and I am a that. And I'm just, I am a liberationist for sure. And I love justice and I love what is good and what is right and what is fair and what is reasonable and what is humane. And the truth is, nothing about colonization or the colonial project was humane.
Absolutely. No question. Unquestionably.
Everything that we need to do to restore ourselves, to restore our families, to restore our hearts, to restore ourselves, our genetic code, all of that is the healing that we're all seeking, whether we know it or not.
So much
that is actually what we're looking for.
I 100% feel that and believe that. So much of so many of the people that I talk to on this show, and that I try to, the experts that I kind of gravitate to, work with the body, because I'm a very conceptual person, and I try to solve things through the intellect as my natural state. And that doesn't work so well, I've found out. It doesn't always kind of get you to where you need to get to. Yeah, because there's a disembodiment that could happen there, right? Like, we could let the mind go away. And when we become disembodied and we don't honor our body, and our body, I believe, the work of like Bessel van der Kolk and a lot of others that say the body, trauma is trapped in the body. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we've got to like you say, the restoration has to fully include our intuition, our feeling, our body, movement. We've got to work through these things. And people who've had lots of trauma, people who've been oppressed by colonizers, there's a lot of that work to be done. There's a lot of that that's...
All of us.
Well,
you know,
everybody has it. Everybody.
Simone, they told you already, colonization, decolonize the colonizer.
Absolutely.
There's so much reconciliation to be done.
Absolutely.
There's so much resolve.
So... what you're doing, because you've already have been an artist and you've already been influenced by these passions of yours, which the passions are, to me, it's really interesting, because it's like the fact you don't want to get too hung up on the fact of like, why do we even have to do this in the first place, right? Why couldn't we started from the place where we all were equanimous, right? Like we all had that, but like this work has to be done. And like, this has now become front and center for a lot of people because it has to be. And so for you, you're influencing your art this way. And now you're able to come into the Web3 space because so much lip service is paid to. I met so many people at ETH Denver that were like, we're going to change the world in this way and that way. And I left there so fired up. I'm not going to lie. Like I went there like trying to meet some people, hope it was going to be cool. I did not expect to come out of there going, I tweeted this, like, what's my place in the world? How do I use the opportunities I have in front of me to make change? What am I doing to further the ecosystem, to further, to evolve as a person with people? Like I didn't think those would be, I have those questions all the time anyway, but I didn't think I'd be leaving ETH Denver that motivated. So that was really inspiring because I did meet a lot of people who have this interest that aren't just trying to make money, that aren't just, because a lot of people come to crypto, many people come to crypto for that reason. Like this is a way that there's tons of money in the space. How do we just get more of what we already have, or how do we maximize our opportunity? And that's a big part of the space. We can't say it's not. That's a lot of people doing that. Some people actually give a shit about decentralization. Some people actually care about true art and care about expression and creative license. Some people really do care about those things. And I feel like it's a percentage of the whole group, which is fine. It's representative of society. But we have this modality that actually does give people the power to do things. And what you're doing is not only are you using your art, which is already inspired by these causes that you care about, but like you're literally tying the end user, the recipient of your art, not only to the experience of enjoying the art, but of actually having a firsthand direct play into these causes, which when you think about even like artists today, Web2, just current artists, right? Not using Web3 technology and stuff to the DAOs and NFTs and such to kind of direct people right directly. But when we pay an artist who, if they're, let's just say it's a hip hop artist that's talking about their experience, and that's amazing they get to talk about their experience and get paid for it. But if they do get back to the community, it's not always very direct, right? It's always like, maybe they'll engage in certain projects and that's awesome. But like, it's still not a very direct way of engaging other than hearing the music, hearing the lyrics, hearing the art, being inspired by it and go, oh, that's that person's experience. That's amazing. And being able to feel that, you're not actively participating in the solution to a lot of the problems that are coming out of that, of that are being articulated in that music. Whereas Web3 vehicles like NFTs and DAOs and what you're doing with your work by form of NFT, you're allowing people to contribute. And I feel like this is like, that's got to become the way. Like this has to be the leading edge of the change that we're doing in the space. Like this is exactly the kind of thing that people need to get behind, because the more we do that, the more we realize like this is direct impact, right? And like if we have direct impact, it's just gonna spiral out. It's gonna be contagious because people are gonna feel empowered. I got to help you and others make this change because you inspired me in this way, and I had a very direct impact, very reciprocal impact back. And I think this is the thing that's never existed before in commodification of art, right? And like,
not to cut your wisdom, Gary, but I think that something that's also different is that all of the projects are community facing projects. So they're, whoever I worked on the project with, they have all the more reason now to onboard.
Yeah.
To say, okay, there is something for me over here. There's someone who believes in my story or believes in my art. And I hear that every day in spaces. How should we be onboarding people? Who should we be onboarding? And I think about DAOs, like, you know, oh, I'm thinking about starting a DAO. I'm like, really? Can you name 100 people who are waiting on you to do something for them today? If the answer is yes, then start a DAO. But if you can't write down 100 people in your direct community that you could influence as a result of that DAO, I don't see the alignment. Excuse me. Y'all have to forgive me. I'm all on the track with my getting betterness. But I think that's the truth. So when I think about some of the projects I have coming, one of the projects, Follow the Money, has students that I've worked with who were incarcerated, who are free, who are on the other side of that now, who are part of that project that I want to onboard. I want to onboard an entire sector of digital arts and graphic arts, build a cohort of youth advisory to advise as a council, the development of NFT New Orleans, which we feel should be a youth-led movement. Because as much as it's about us and everybody who's been learning in the space and building the space, it's about these youth who are already in Discords. They're already gaming. They're already giving all of their lunch money to Fortnite. They're not gaining. They're not benefiting. They need to know that this is a mutually beneficial space, that this is just not another frontier of this monster that just takes, extracts. But every project it involves at least five, if not more, folks who I'm in direct community with as creative, as advocate, the gamut, who I believe should be in the space. But I think that showing them that Web3 is more values-based than some of the experiences they've had in Web2, which Web2 is like, it doesn't matter. Optics matter, streams and views. Web3, if we're talking, we need to align, you know, what we say, our values and our actions, like align the two of those things. A lot of the spaces I've been hearing, you know, recently, they're just kind of like, it's sort of sounding like when you listen to the E! Gossip Show and you're like, oh, it's Kanye coming over. Is such and such going to get an NFT? Right. And you're like, what is this? What is this? Will the blockchain break chains? Like, will this, what is this? What is this really? Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, suspect as we think it is for everybody to say that they're the new Web3 expert. Is it suspect as I believe that, you know, the guardians of this space are now sort of turning into people who are gently trying to onboard billionaires and not for the game. Right. Not because they're believing that these would be folks who would collect art, but that people who would just further their own agenda, which at this point has just been to be a billionaire. Yeah. And I have no shade against billionaire. I'm just saying that when you get $1 billion, what you do with it to directly impact, you know, the nation, that, and by that, your village, your community, that matters. And, you know, there's a lot of power there. So I hope that power in the sense of Ashe, the command, the will to bring about and to create the things that we want to create in terms of our wellness, in terms of our growth, in terms of our sustainability, all of that takes resources. And if you meet, you know, me or someone on my team, you're like, man, I would just love to see more of this. And we get that all the time. If people in East Denver were like, this floor, this experience, this is like, you know, dozens and dozens of people meditating and dozens of people learning about plant medicine and moving and dancing and grounding and having these exchanges. And you're saying you want more of that, but your wallets don't, the wallets reflect, you know, let me try to get in on the next big PFP thing. You know, as opposed to investing in your own, you know, so it's your own sustainability. Like investing in me is investing in your wellness, investing in liberation, investing in this world that you say you want. So, you know, I know it to be true. So,
yeah, I think with that too, it's like my personal feeling is that that involves trust. People have to trust that by taking that step, that they are going to have an impact and it will be a chain reaction, and that people will, because everyone I talk to, so worried about investing in the thing that's going to blow up on them, or that they're going to just lose money on or whatever. Right. And there are some rug pulls, there are things that happen in the space that people just, you know, get hurt. And it's like, well, with this, it's like, if you want to see more of this, then we've got to collectively take action so that people understand the value. That's how value works. Like you've got to put value into it. You've got to offer the value up. And then that's how value gets created.
You're a part of it.
Yeah.
Creating the value. You're saying, I value justice.
Right,
yes,
right.
I value that.
Right. And then it's like, oh, somebody else put their money where their mouth was and they valued it. Therefore, that's a thing now. I can do that. I can value what someone else. And that just gets... And that will get carried on, right? We all create value. Like even those dumb PFPs. Someone has decided this little like leprechaun or whatever the hell has got a value because they've decided it. And
that's
then other
it.
People follow in, right? Other people jump in. So like,
and we have a roadmap and we have defined, you know, what our utility is. But something about being a Black queer femme.
Mm-hmm.
It's like people don't interrogate that in their selves. Why can't I bring myself? So sometimes I get like secret monies that people have sent. And it's not really secret, it's transparent because you can see the wallet.
Yeah.
I have multiple wallets.
Right.
So I'll say that I think that there's something potent and viral in a good sense, like those good germs. Like you said, that it catches on when you say aloud, I don't think it's okay for a youth to be sentenced to 10 to 99 years on a first offense of which he was sort of forced into this plea deal for. So I need to support that project that's saying no to that. Or I am for reparations. Once we start saying those things aloud and just normalizing that in itself becomes a solvent, a balm for our heart space to be like, okay, I don't have to secretly have ethics and values and longing for change and a better world. I don't have to, like, that's cool to do. Everything doesn't have to be art for art's sake and lighthearted insofar as like, oh, it's just, you know, this cool thing that came about. It can certainly be like, I'm supporting that because it's filled with fervor and I don't know what to do except for invest in that. And I want to see more of that. And I want to support the people who are part of that project and their well-being. And that's what has to catch on.
Yeah, it does. Well, I will say that it's just kind of being in your presence for a few minutes and then also being with you here. If there's anybody who could be a conduit for this, I feel like if more people like yourself that not only have the passion that you have, but are able to kind of have the compassion and empathy for others who might struggle, who need to be called in, like you said, who need to be kind of, you know, you need to have some awareness that they're going to be at different levels. Like you have that awareness. And because other people, I feel like very often when I talk to folks, like they get all defensive or offended if they're called out. Like, it's like, whoa, I've been called out. Like, that's not fair. It's not right. You shouldn't call me out. And I feel like it's a challenge, I think, to be able to call people to action by calling them in and not calling them out and not pushing people away, even if, you know, it's pretty clear that what's right should be done and it's still, you know, they're maybe not seeing it. Finding that nuance, finding that ability to kind of have that balance where you can appreciate the fact that maybe there is a lack of courage on that side, right? And because it does take courage to...
It does.
To do something that's different from those who are around you and say like, no, like I got to speak my piece here. That's why people are giving you secret ETH or anonymous Ethereum. It's because like you said, like they want to help and it's coming from a good place, but it takes courage and not everybody has that. And that could be cultivated. You know, I feel like by calling people in more and more, you could definitely cultivate that. I find that with life experience, that comes to me easier because you have less hangups. That's just my own perception.
Gary, it's also the reverse too, because I've landed at a place in my own worthy and deservingness.
Right.
So when I get messages that are like, thank you, thank you, thank you, I always say, you're very welcome. I will do this until there's no need for me to do this anymore. right? And then I will retire and my sanctuary will all be better because of it. But seriously, the best way to say thank you to me is to support my projects, support my art, amplify my art, invest in my art, invest in my team. You know, if you see the Meta Matriarchs or somebody from that team doing work by their art, you know, so it comes in those forms.
Let's actually plug all of that. Because we're coming an hour and a half in and this has been an amazing conversation. So I'm so happy that we got to have this chat. I have a very strong feeling this is going to be my most watched episode. Like, I feel like we're talking about things that need to be talked about. We're I am so excited to have this discussion. And like, I really do appreciate you allowing me to kind of, I don't speak my piece about these types of issues very often on this show, and I need to more. Like, it's not intentional, but I need to kind of get it out more. And if you know, it just is what it is, and that's how I feel. So why would I hold that back? And I need to do this more.
I salute you in your head and, you know, your positive, loving, supportive ancestors that supported you with knowing that when it was time for you to make the move that didn't align with you. It's like, I wanted this thing. I wanted it for the wrong reasons. I didn't know till I was here. By the way, most people don't know. You do not know jail, not even unless you have been on the opposite side of where those visitation walls take you, where those hallways go. You have no idea, y'all, what kind of third space we are living side by side with right now. There is no version of democracy, no version of justice or America even, that I believe that majority of folks who say that they're justice, freedom loving people would say, you know, yes to, if they could just see. I don't mean the behind scare straight or the orange is the new black version. I'm saying the moment that you're talking about, that moment of being on a tier, even hearing the space, the visceral reality lets you know it just none of it sits right. None of it says this is what we want. I know we can do better. So,
yeah.
So, yeah, I just, like I said, I salute you for making that shift. That takes courage and, you know, it takes the knowledge of self.
I appreciate you. I appreciate that. I want people to hear, let's go slowly through all the places they can find your work. Let's talk about Meta Matriarchs. Let's talk about your work on Zora. And are you on Foundation? So I'll let you just tell people where to find yourself.
Yeah. So the Meta Matriarchs, our team of, we are a collective of visual artists, sound healers. We have illustrators, DJs, musicians, and we've all gotten together to produce art that facilitates restoration, healing, and elevation, right? We say that it's the onboarding of the matriarchy because we believe that it's through that deep maternal love that you actually get to know what it feels like to be nurtured, what it feels like to center wellness. And to us, that's like the balance that's needed in the space to sustain the ecosystem. Because if it's just mind, shield, token, tech, we're going to be burnt out and our beloved blockchain won't be here in 2 years. It'll be gone, you know. But if we can, in our founding years, cultivate this value for wellness in action, we're going to be all right. We're going to be better than good. So the Meta Matriarchs at Meta Matriarchs on Twitter, and it's myself, Monica Rose Kelly, Funke, Antonio Zanaro, and Hood Hilamimi. We do phenomenal work in person. We build out an immersive healing art experience. That's where I met you, Gary. We built out a shrine room.
That's amazing.
We built out an sonic site apothecary. We use a lot of sound, light, and shadow to create this very harmonious, immersive healing experience. So for us to ground ourselves in our bodies and have this, like, you know, elevated connection space. So that's our first mint together was a Mint on Foundation. It was a Foundation drop. It was my first music NFT. And we accomplished that with a collaborator of ours in New Orleans. Their name is Danielle Miles. They are not on Twitter. They will not be on Twitter, even though we're like, I don't even try to be like, hey, be on Twitter, but they're not on Twitter. Right. But they're an amazing, amazing digital artist, illustrator, graphic design artist, several generations in. Who's also worked for a long time with Monica Rose Kelly, who's an amazing illustrator. And then myself as a musician and then a producer here in town who goes by St. Amethyst. She remixed one of the songs on my album and we got together to create this animated music NFT that comes with a sync license, usage of the track, the animated music NFT itself, and also the installation that you experienced at Denver. So to actually book, you know, that experience as well. So
where can that one project be found?
That project is on Foundation. So if you're someone who's a curator, if you're someone who's a talent buyer, if you're thinking of a conference, if you have a South by Southwest experience, or you have an experience where you're like, man, I really want elevated space. I want there to be art and music and healing. Come pass by the Foundation. My Foundation drop, which is the Crown Matriarch, and it's an all-inclusive experience. And then I have the rest of my projects are minted on Zora. So I have Follow the Money, which is the blockchain's first visual protest. It's a music video, but it's actually a visual protest, and it features myself, some of my former students, current activists and folks who were studying the case for reparations. It's a song on my album produced by Frank Carrick called Follow the Money. And it speaks candidly about, you know, what time it is. It is right now minting on Zora for 0.8 ETH is the first bid. We're hoping someone will bid on the project because if they do, then all of the youth that were a part of that project also get a win and they get that incentive to feel like, oh, this is something that I want to be a part of. I want to be a part of this youth cohort. I want to help build out at NFT New Orleans. This was successful in this space. The other project that I've minted on Zora is called Close, and it is a mindfulness, a meditation, a visual meditation. It was created in homage to Orisha Obatala and the spirit of creation. This all of the clearance of the noise that we need to actually generate the ideas to bring about or to manifest, you know, what it is we want to live in, what it else, you know. So just knowing that takes a certain clarity and a certain quiet in the mind that I most, you know, that is also on Zora, minting for 0.8. The bids are there. I minted both of those ahead of ETH Denver. So the auctions have been live for about a week and a half, going on 2 weeks now. But hoping that folks will bid on them. That project features, you know, an amazing, amazing contemporary artist based in New Orleans. Jessica Strahan's art is all over my body.
Oh, okay.
Beautiful.
I've watched it so many times and I've showed a bunch of people already. That one, that one is gorgeous. It is beautiful. Yeah, I love that.
Bid on it. Share it with someone who wants to collect it.
Yeah.
I tell people all the time, I know I'm new in the space. I know you have no idea who I am. I know that my work, though, is rooted in legacy. You know, I know that the worth is there. And I know that, you know, when the story is written, it is around the impact. It is around the whole volume of impact. And I'm excited about that. Are you going to be at South by Southwest?
I will. I didn't know you were going to be there. Nice.
I really want to be there. I can't speak much about a collaboration yet, but I have a collaboration with an artist who's a little bit longer in the space than I, and they also do hip hop. And he's a really dope artist.
We should talk after this because I got some ideas. I got a bunch of ideas right now. So we should talk after this.
Yeah. You know, but follow me on the Twitter. It's Charm Taylor is the future. It's at Charm like magic. On Instagram, Charm Taylor is the future.
We're going to post all this in the show notes, everybody.
Yeah, post all that. Gary, I appreciate you reaching out to me. And yeah, for believing that we can do it, we can do better. I know we can.
We definitely can. No question. And hopefully we can have, maybe we can have another conversation like this in the future. I think there's a lot more to unpack here, a lot more to be said. And I'm just so excited there are people like you in this space. Like I said, I mean, it really, when I just felt your energy when I was there, I was like, I don't know what this woman is creating, but I just know it's impactful. I just know what it is because I could feel that I felt your energy. And it's very obvious that you are, what I love about what you just said was, you know, the value's there because it's coming from beyond you. It's not just you, your identity, putting something out. It's for its own sake. It was set into motion by factors, by conditions that have worked through you to make this what it is. And by virtue of that, it's got value, and you know that. Yeah. And I love that because it's like very often people, artists especially, can get in their own heads and they'll create and they'll think, like you just said, like, is this worth something? Because when you start having that debate, it's because you're getting into personality, you're getting into your ego and your perception of like, is this, do I have the permission? Do I have the right to put this out? But when you're focused on the work because it's coming through you and it's forces that are working through you, then you just know it's got value. I don't have to second guess it. It was born for a reason. It has value. Therefore, like, go take a look at it because it's got value. I know it does.
Yeah. It's not such a thing. Go ahead.
Yeah. I know. I love that. Well, anyway, so yeah, we're about an hour. This is the longest I've ever run on the show, but I feel like there's so much to cover. So I appreciate it. I appreciate you so much, Charm. Thank you so much for coming on the show. And I'm definitely going to be promoting the heck out of this episode and making sure everybody gets to see all your amazing art and your team's art too. Like everybody you collaborate with, because they also are extremely talented people
they are so worthy and deserving.
Are very purpose-driven.
They're the real
people.
Deal.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much. And until next time. And if there's anything else you want to talk about, we can always do this again. So I appreciate it.
Well, I think the Meta Matriarchs are going to come in and maybe we can do a collective talk with you, or some of us could all come on and maybe rotate out or something like that.
I would love that. Yeah. We have a lot to talk about, I feel like. So yeah. Thanks so much.
All right. Peace.